Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John O'Neill, and as Chairman of the Board of Directors, I welcome you to Echo Entertainment Group's third annual general meeting of shareholders here at the new event center at The Star in Sydney. I'm proud to welcome you to this fabulous event center here at The Star, which has just opened at the start of this year. In our first year of operation, we have already hosted events of the caliber of the NRL season launch, the ACTA or the Dally M Awards, and we have hosted great shows by artists such as Seal, Ricky Martin, and John Farnham, and we're home to almost 200 banquet functions a year. Before we commence, there are some housekeeping matters to attend to. Firstly, this meeting is being webcast live. To ensure that the communication systems are not interfered with, could I ask that you please turn off all mobile telephones and electronic devices. Also, for those shareholders who drove today, we have provided complimentary car parking and pre-validated car park exit tickets will be handed out by the event centre staff after the meeting. The car park boom gates will be open between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. If you expect to leave after 2 p.m. today, please ensure you collect a ticket from one of the event centre staff before you leave today. I will now turn to the formalities of the meeting. With a quorum present, the meeting is properly constituted, and I will formally declare the meeting open. The notice of meeting was sent to all shareholders on the 4th of October 2013, and copies of the notice were also available at the registration desk this morning. I will therefore take the notice of meeting as read. I'd like to begin by introducing your board of directors. As you know, we have three new members who have joined our board since last year's meeting, and I will be pleased to provide more details of their individual credentials later in the meeting. I will ask each director to stand as I introduce them. With me today are Anne Brennan, Deputy Chair and Non-Executive Director, Katie Leahy, Non-Executive Director, Richard Shepherd, Non-Executive Director, Gerard Bradley, Non-Executive Director, John Redmond, our Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, and Matt Beckier, our Chief Financial Officer and Executive Director. Also with us today are Paula Martin, our Company Secretary, and John Robinson, the Company's Audit Partner with Ernst & Young for the 2013 financial year. Before we proceed to the items of business for this meeting, I would like to present my address and report to the company, and I'll then ask Managing Director and CEO John Redmond to provide his report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to just the third annual general meeting of this young company. It marks the second full year of independent operations and my first full year in the chair of Echo Entertainment. 2013 was certainly an eventful year, and the ongoing rapid and dynamic evolution of our operating environments and markets continue to present significant opportunities and challenges for the company. Our Managing Director and CEO, John Redmond, and I are looking forward to sharing our perspectives on these with you this morning. Specifically, I will provide an update on some organisational fundamentals, such as our board and management team, as the establishment phase of the new company is completed, and a platform for Echo Entertainment Group's future prosperity is established. The board fully recognises that the key to success is to deliver optimal operational and financial performance. Of course, it is this that will drive shareholder value and position the group strongly for all future scenarios. This, therefore, continues to be the focus of our attention for the board and management, and John Redmond will provide some further detail in this regard. What is apparent is that the future presents our company with a truly extraordinary range of very significant opportunities. We remain focused on prioritising effectively to enable us to take full advantage of them. Before I hand over to John, I will provide just a flavour of those opportunities. John Redmond will speak in more detail to the company's performance in FY13, and the areas on which we are focusing to drive ongoing improvement. and he will add his own perspective on our strategic landscape from the front line of our activities in Sydney and Queensland. Some of you may recall my commitment to shareholders at last year's meeting that we would be drawing a line in the sand, and how determined I was that there would be no more slip-ups or stumbles. I'm pleased to report that this commitment has been delivered and a number of fundamental measures set in place during the 2013 financial year. The board has been refreshed with Cuddy Lay, who we introduced last year, formally becoming a non-executive director, along with Richard Shepherd and then Gerard Bradley. Katie's deep experience in the retail, tourism and entertainment sectors is complemented by Richard and Gerard's background, each with significant financial and commercial capability spanning the private and public sectors. Katie is currently chairman of Carnival Australia and has previously held long-term board positions with companies such as David Jones Limited, Hills Motorway and Australia Post. Katie's executive career includes 10 years as Chief Executive of the Business Council of Australia, and she is currently the Managing Director of Korn Ferry International. Richard has had an extensive career in the banking and finance sector, with an executive career with Macquarie Group spanning more than 30 years, including the role of Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer of Macquarie Bank Limited. Richard is currently Chairman of Macquarie Group Foundation and of Green State Power, as well as a director of Dexus Property Group. Gerard is currently the chairman of Queensland Treasury Corporation, having served for 14 years as under-treasurer and under-secretary of the Queensland Treasury Department. He has extensive experience in public sector finance in both Queensland and South Australia, and his previous non-executive board memberships include Funds SA and Queensland Investment Corporation. Board committees have been reconstituted. The Board Audit Committee, now chaired by Gerard Bradley, and Risk and Compliance Committee is chaired by Richard Shepherd. They've been supplemented with the People, Culture and Social Responsibility Committee, chaired by Cuddy Lay, which is now in place, together with the Combined Remuneration and Nomination Committee, chaired by our Deputy Chairman, Anne Brennan. At the same time, we have been delighted to secure the services of John Redmond as the Group's Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. John's industry credentials are second to none, including an executive management career spanning more than 25 years in the United States. Mr. Redmond was Co-Chief Executive Officer of MGM Grand Inc., then Co-Chief Executive Officer of MGM Mirage, and later held the position of President and CEO of MGM Grand Resorts. He is genuinely a heavyweight in this sector, and the business is already seeing the benefit of his world-leading expertise, both strategically and operationally. In the relatively short period since John took the reins in January this year, he has gone about resetting the business to more strongly position it to capitalise on our valuable licences in Sydney and Queensland, and to compete effectively in what is a rapidly changing operating environment. His emphasis has been on repositioning our properties within the fabric of their locations, a major shift to more fact-based, customer-centric planning, and the maintenance of sustainable cost-saving initiatives. At the same time, John led ECHO's participation in the New South Wales Government's unsolicited proposal process with great energy and professionalism in often challenging circumstances. What was put forward to the government and to the people of New South Wales was visionary and exceeded the board's expectations in many ways. It would have wonderfully linked the harbourside precincts of Pyrmont, Darling Harbour and Barangaroo. While ultimately not successful, the process delivered some opportunities for ECHO, and we will continue to work to capitalise on those to the greatest extent possible. Furthermore, through strong and steady management, John is making significant progress already in just a few short months, despite the economic climate and soft retail environment in Australia generally during his time. Overall, in FY13, the group's results were solid, with NPAT of $83.5 million, up 98% on the prior period, and statutory EBITDA of $335 million, up 26% on the prior period. A final dividend of 2 cents per share was declared, taking full-year dividends to 6 cents per share, fully franked, above ECHO's target payout ratio of 50% of statutory NPAT. This reflects the board's confidence in the business's momentum and the benefits expected from the restructuring we've undertaken. It has been pleasing to see the continuing strong growth in both volume and share of international VIP business, with FY13 normalised VIP business revenue increasing 26.9%, with actual revenue up 42.8%. In fact, ECHO Entertainment's increase to 34% market share of the Australian and New Zealand VIP business market turnover in the second half of FY13 pushed Crown Resorts below 60% market share for the first time. Just 5 years ago, Crown held 80% of that market. Significant growth of about 25% in revenues from the Star's non-gaming business is also testament to the traction now being generated by the venue's high-quality tourism and entertainment facilities, all of which became fully operational in FY13. John will talk more with specificity about performance and the areas of priority attention going forward, but I might expand briefly on ECHO's push to better integrate our properties in their locations and communities. The future growth of this business is underpinned by the attractive licences we own. All of our casino licences are very long dated, which provide a strong base for investment. While part of Tabcorp Holdings Limited Group, the level of investment across the then casinos division did not effectively maximise the underlying potential that those licences afforded. One of the key drivers of the demerger and the establishment of ECHO Entertainment Group as a standalone pure play casino business was the realisation that this lack of investment was not maximising value for shareholders, and a more dedicated and focused approach to investing in our assets was required. We could not have moved faster in committing a significant investment upgrade in Sydney, and our attention is now firmly on Queensland. With John at the helm, the board's strategy on investment and the future of these valuable licences has evolved. John will talk more specifically to some of the exciting future growth opportunities for this company. ECHO's properties occupy exclusive places in their cities and to various extents and continue to play particular roles for those places and their communities. This year has seen a renewed emphasis on defining those roles and a number of significant steps towards reinforcing them. In terms of ECHO's contribution to the Australian, New South Wales and Queensland economies, the impact is really significant. Over $350 million in gaming taxes and levies paid in FY13 alone. Significant investment in tourism infrastructure. International guests who visit and enjoy our establishments, often making multiple trips, and over 8,000 staff employed. We can all be truly proud of the significant economic contribution this business has made to the local communities we operate in. Our corporate responsibility and community involvement spreads much wider than driving a purely economic contribution. In Sydney, the Star now enjoys a unique alignment with the signature events and institutions that this city and its visitors have and love. From Sydney's world-famous New Year's Eve celebrations to the Sydney Festival, where the Star is now the principal partner, Chinese New Year, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, the Sydney Autumn Racing Carnival, Vivid Sydney, the football finals, Art and About, Good Food Month, and the festive season in Sydney, the Star has established key relationships to support, extend and enhance these events to help maximise the benefits they deliver to the city, to the state and of course to the Star. The new events centre, which we're in today, which is absolutely fantastic, has played host to gala events for charity partners such as the Sydney Children's Hospital, the Thomas Kelly Youth Foundation, and the Carbine Club. It's fair to say now, more than ever, that if it's on in Sydney, it's on at the Star. This very deliberate alignment with all the good things happening in Sydney is really only just beginning to crystallise, and a similar philosophy guides our approach to relationships in Queensland. With $100 million now contributed to the Jupiter's Casino Community Benefit Fund since its inception, Echo is continuing to progress new ways of bringing our assets and our capabilities to bear on supporting Brisbane, the Gold Coast and Townsville in pursuing the aspirations of those cities and their communities. Echo Entertainment Group's fresh philosophy and outlook, combined with the long local roots of our properties, will create unique opportunities in each of our cities. In partnership with governments and other stakeholders, Echo is committed to investing to establish distinctive destinations that will drive tourism and promote economic growth, delivering benefits for our communities, our people, and most importantly, our shareholders. As I mentioned at the outset, the current outlook presents the business with an extraordinary range of opportunities. In Queensland, the Newman government's vision to revitalise Brisbane by redeveloping a significant precinct in the CBD through an integrated development presents exciting opportunities for transformational development for the city and the region. Echo Entertainment's vision for Brisbane and Queensland is to deliver a place-defining city and tourism asset to Brisbane as part of a holistic proposition for southeast Queensland. The Treasury Casino and Hotel has reached its capacity, and its nature makes it ill-suited to compete in today's tourism and entertainment landscape. Furthermore, the current Treasury facility is a unique heritage-listed building with substantial value under an alternative use within a precinct-wide transformation. Our plans would deliver the large-scale tourism and entertainment proposition that can activate Brisbane and complete its offering as Australia's new world city. We have been seeking an opportunity to repurpose the heritage buildings housing the Treasury Casino and Hotel and relocate and enhance our gaming infrastructure within a new, large and very entertaining precinct. Echo Entertainment also has plans to deliver a complementary world-class development on the Gold Coast to better enable Queensland to compete effectively as a region on the contemporary world stage. John Redman will talk to this in more detail later in the presentation, including giving all shareholders a sneak preview of some of our plans. The dialogue with the Queensland Government has been open and constructive, and we look forward to the commencement of the EOI, the Expression of Interest process, for the Brisbane CBD precinct later in the year, as recently announced by the government. Meanwhile, in Sydney, the prospective entry of Crown Resorts in 2019 could inevitably see the state's and the nation's gaming market further fragmented, with two quite distinct offerings operating in Sydney by the end of this decade. Let me put that into context. We value exclusivity. We worked extremely hard to attempt to retain it, and we're very disappointed to lose it. And while we in no way underestimate our competitors, we see a bright future for the Star beyond the end of 2019, when we face likely competition from Crown Sydney. Your Managing Director and Chief Executive, John Redman, achieved very significant success in Las Vegas, where competition is intense. Sydney is a tourism destination of real global appeal that can support a very substantial integrated resort and gaming offering, and at the Star we have a unique offering and a platform to secure a strong share of market that we think can grow, that can continue to grow significantly. While we will not be telegraphing details of our plans before time, it goes without saying that Echo Entertainment will be working to take full advantage of the opportunities presented by the state's anticipated reconfigured regulatory framework, tax and operating arrangements, as well as the significant benefits of the Star's casino licence exclusivity over the next 6 years. As we have seen over the last 12 months, in this industry, 6 years is a very long time. Rest assured, that time will not be wasted. I will now pass over to our Managing Director and Chief Executive, John Redman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. This is my first annual general meeting and Managing Director, CEO of Echo Entertainment Group, having commenced in the role in January of this year. Most of you know I joined the company's board in FY12 as a non-executive director. When the opportunity to move into the managing director role came up, I put my name forward as it was such a terrific and unique opportunity to lead the direction of a relatively new company. For my presentation today, I will provide an overview of the financial results for FY13 and highlight some of the initiatives we have focused on since I started. I am pleased to say that a number of these initiatives are already driving improved performance in the early part of FY14. I would then like to take some time to outline the future development opportunities for this company. Given our established licenses, this is a very exciting time for Echo Entertainment, with significant growth opportunities presenting themselves. Australian state governments, like a number of jurisdictions around the world, are increasingly seeing the tourism and other economic benefits of large-scale integrated resorts and are encouraging investment. The FY13 year was a challenging one, with soft underlying economic conditions in our core markets, significant cost restructuring undertaken, and the unsolicited proposal submitted to the New South Wales government requiring significant attention of management in the second half of the financial year. Despite this, Echo generated actual group revenue growth of 9.3% and EBITDA growth of 12.1% before significant items. Even adjusting for variations in win rate in the VIP business, normalized revenue rose 7.2% and EBITDA 1.4%. Statutory NPAT for the group rose almost 98% on the prior period to $83.5 million, although the prior period was impacted by higher significant items and a lower VIP business win rate. FY13 NPAT, after normalizing for win rate and significant items, was $126.9 million. Analyzing the key drivers of growth in FY13 shows that the VIP business had a very strong year, and the Star generated solid growth, offset somewhat by a soft result in our Queensland properties. A great deal of work was done in FY13 to prepare the business for improved financial performance in the future. A significant cost optimization program was implemented that is on track to generate in excess of $60 million of cost savings across the group in FY14. This program was required to restore the company's operating expenditure base to levels that are more sustainable in the longer term and deliver appropriate margins. The focus of the cost optimization program has been on support and other non-customer facing areas to minimize any impact on the experience and service delivered to our customers. In parallel, we also negotiated the enterprise agreement at the Star, and a similar negotiation took place in Brisbane in the current period, both of which have achieved more sustainable cost bases and improved flexibility around our largest single business expenditure. We also relaunched our loyalty program, Absolute Rewards, in June 2013 and are encouraged by the early response. We see Absolute Rewards delivered by our customer-facing team members as a key marketing tool for our business and one that will be very important in driving revenue over time. The VIP business also continued its strong momentum in FY13. We continued to gain share in the VIP business, and I will talk more about this business later in the presentation. These initiatives have all set up the business well going into FY14. Let me talk more about our relaunched group-wide loyalty program, Absolute Rewards, because it is a key feature of driving future earnings. One of the early priorities I had when I entered into the role was to totally reconfigure the loyalty program. Through my professional career, I've had wide exposure to hospitality and airline industries, and the aspirational nature of their rewards programs is something I knew could be replicated across the gaming and leisure industry. While this business has had loyalty programs in the past, they've been historically property-specific and focused predominantly on rewarding slot machine customers. With the relaunch of Absolute Rewards, we now have a property-wide and group-wide program where customers earn points and redeem points across the whole property and between properties. A loyalty program that rewards customers for spend across the whole property is critical to the success of our integrated resorts. Given the relaunch program is still relatively new, we will continue to communicate with our customers about the great rewards on offer, as well as refine and add benefits to the program. Our goal is to make Absolute Rewards the most rewarding, entertainment-focused loyalty program in Australia. Our VIP business has been the standout success story at the Star. VIP business front money at the group level grew 35%, driven by the Star, with actual group VIP revenue up 43%. The VIP business has exhibited strong and consistent growth at the Star, with a compound annual growth rate of almost 50% on actual gross revenue since 2010. Echo's share of the Australian and New Zealand international VIP business market has risen from 20% in FY10 to 34% in the second half of FY13. While the top line growth was nothing less than exemplary, it is the quality of the business and the overall earnings that are worth highlighting, including our scrutiny on credit and collections, an expansion in our international sales presence, and much improved service levels. At the end of FY13, total net trade receivables fell 33% to $74 million, despite significant growth in revenue. On all accounts, the VIP business had an exceptional year in FY13, and we remain confident on the outlook for that business. A significant opportunity also exists for Echo in Queensland, with targeted investment to drive materially larger VIP business revenue in both Brisbane and the Gold Coast. I will talk more about our plans in those markets shortly. I will turn now to the group trading update. Trading for the start of FY14 has followed similar trends to FY13. Discretionary consumer spending remains relatively subdued in our core domestic market segments, and this continues to impact revenue growth. Our domestic revenue growth has also been impacted by an increased focus on more profitable marketing spend, so is not entirely comparable to the prior period where revenue had been boosted by marketing that didn't necessarily drive profit. The VIP business has continued to see growth in front money in the first 4 months of the year. However, the rate of growth has moderated significantly after a strong start to the year in July and August. It is not uncommon for the VIP business volumes to experience volatility from month to month, and the overall momentum and full-year outlook for VIP business remains positive. Despite the relatively soft domestic revenue growth, EBITDA has experienced marginal growth over the prior period as the benefits of the cost optimization program and more efficient marketing through Absolute Rewards flows through. This is despite the business absorbing the additional government gaming levies imposed in Queensland and New South Wales, which had a $5 million impact on first quarter earnings. A $2 million one-off payment associated with the enterprise agreement for the Treasury Brisbane property, the benefits of which will be realized in future periods. Lower than expected hold percentage in private gaming areas, and short-term impact from a $2 million jackpot in slots in October that was not in a prior period. Let me now turn to some of the investment opportunities before the company. In Queensland, our investment plans are well-developed and have been significantly extended and enhanced compared to those described as Project Icon. We see significant growth opportunities for a company in both Brisbane and the Gold Coast. Short, medium, and long-term plans have been developed for both properties. our perpetual licenses with our significant land holding in the Gold Coast and long-term leases in Brisbane, if coupled with the government precinct, offer capacity for expansion. The scale of potential investments will ultimately be determined based on the operating conditions and other factors that permit ECHO to generate an appropriate return on investment for our shareholders. Subject to this and further work, total investment in Queensland could exceed $1.5 billion. We are encouraged by the vision displayed by the Newman government to stimulate investment in Queensland, which has been coupled with a program of industry regulatory reform. We view the opportunity to transform our properties in Queensland into world-class integrated resorts capable of competing with the best in the region as a significant opportunity for this company and a win-win for the people of Queensland. I have spent a significant amount of time in Queensland, including numerous meetings with key business and community stakeholders since starting my role in January, as we recognize the importance of this investment to ECHO and to Queensland. We have a well-developed vision to provide the Queensland government with a solution for the whole of Southeast Queensland, with investment that leverages the properties ECHO already has in the state, converting them into world-class integrated resorts with the smallest possible increase in gaming in the state. With this period of significant investment opportunity before the company, we are considering the future of Jupiter's Townsville to the ECHO Group. While the recent performance of Jupiter's Townsville has been positive, the size and breadth of appeal of the Townsville market means more limited opportunity for the creation of a large-scale integrated resort. To date, no decision has been made, and a transaction would only take place if appropriate value is generated. Providing more color on our plans for investment in Southeast Queensland, I will start with the Gold Coast. A master planning exercise of the Jupiter's Gold Coast site has been conducted, and we have well-advanced plans for investment, which include much-needed enhancement of the existing complex and significant investment in new facilities to restore Jupiter's Gold Coast to an iconic destination with international appeal. The large site we own at Jupiter's provides ample capacity to invest and improve the appeal of Jupiter's Gold Coast and to have a footprint and scale necessary to compete with the best in the world. Our plans leverage the existing property and infrastructure at Jupiter's, but bring it to a level that the Gold Coast can truly sell as a world-class, must-visit destination. The investment and timing will be subject to the receipt of various approvals. Plans under consideration for investment in the near term include a new six-star hotel, significant expansion in food and beverage venues, as well as new VIP gaming and private gaming room facilities. We have started the process of acquiring the relevant approvals with the aim of starting works by the second half of 2014. Details of the investment, including capital expenditure levels and timing, will be outlined once the requisite approvals are received. This slide shows our vision for the near-term expansion of Jupiter's Gold Coast, which we have been discussing with key stakeholders. The new six-star hotel tower, which you can see in the image, would not only be the premier hotel in the Gold Coast, but also in Australia. The tower would include VIP gaming salons to attract high rollers out of Asia, a market where we see significant potential opportunity for expansion in the Gold Coast, given the position of our asset. As you can see, this hotel design is competitive with the best available anywhere in Asia, and when combined with the significant property enhancements, would be a major draw card for the Gold Coast. A hotel like this looks even more beautiful at night. We have provided an image here of one of our new bar concepts, part of a significantly expanded and improved food and beverage offer. The last image for the Gold Coast is a concept image for the long-term vision. As you can see, the site we own and currently operate on provides significant capacity to continue to expand and add to the offering. This provides significant opportunity for future growth as demand develops. Now turning to Brisbane. The Queensland government announced in October it will initiate an expression of interest process for the redevelopment of the government precinct in Brisbane CBD expected to begin before the end of the calendar year. The core government precinct neighbors include Echo's current Treasury Casino and Hotel buildings, as well as a number of important heritage buildings. As mentioned, Echo plans to put forward a proposal that would transform the broader precinct, including our current properties, into a large-scale, connected, integrated resort and entertainment precinct. The proposal would enable a repurposing of the existing casino buildings and upgrade of the Treasury Hotel such that they can be enjoyed by the people of Brisbane and visitors alike, while preserving and improving the accessibility of the heritage elements of the precinct. The investment timing will be driven by site availability, with an estimated start for construction in the 2017 calendar year and potential for completion in the latter part of 2020. The capital expenditure profile, potential partnerships and funding sources will evolve once the EOI process commences. We believe we are uniquely placed to deliver an integrated development that drives tourism, delivers on the vision of the Newman government for the precinct, and delivers the greatest economic benefits and lowest social costs for the people of Brisbane. We are extremely excited about the opportunity before us in Brisbane and see this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and a very substantial opportunity for the shareholders of Echo Entertainment Group. As commencement of the government's process in relation to the government precinct is pending, we propose at this time only to share with you concepts of what the refurbished and upgraded Treasury Casino and hotel buildings could look like if we were to be successful. We look forward to being able to provide additional information in the future. Starting with the current Treasury Hotel building, we will look to restore the building to one of the world's premier heritage hotels and unique offer for the city of Brisbane. As can be seen from the photos, the exterior would be improved and access to the hotel upgraded to create a truly six-star experience. The interiors of the hotel would be upgraded to a world-class standard. The atrium lobby shown will be a must-see destination which complements and celebrates the beautiful heritage building. It is envisioned that the current casino building and current Treasury Hotel will be combined and transformed to a six-star hotel with unmatched event space and boutique high-end retail. Finally, let me touch on the Star. As you can see all around you, the Star is now a world-class destination due to investments that have been made and were concluded on budget in January of this year. Considerable time and attention of management and board has been focused on developing the future strategy for the property. A number of opportunities to invest to drive better performance from the property have been identified. We currently expect annual capital expenditure at the Star on average to approximate annual depreciation over the medium term as we position the Star to maximize underlying market opportunity. Areas of investment currently proposed to be undertaken at the Star over the medium term include improvement and expansion of local private gaming rooms, reinvestment and expansion in VIP gaming facilities, expansion in food and beverage offerings, starting with a new buffet in the second half of FY14. Upgrade of the Astro Hotel and Residences and other refurbishment works. Concept images of the proposed refurbishment of Astro Hotel and Residences at the Star and new buffet are provided. With the work undertaken under Project Star and these further medium-term investments, I am confident we will have a property that is very competitive. In closing, I would like to acknowledge and thank the management team and all employees for their ongoing efforts in delivering on the company's priorities. I will now hand it back to John. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Ladies and gentlemen, we now come to the formal business of the meeting for which we will adopt the following format. There is a lot to cover, so I ask for your patience. Each of the resolutions put to the meeting will be moved in the order that they are set out in the notice of meeting. The resolution will then be open for discussion. As this is a meeting of Echo Entertainment Group Limited shareholders, only shareholders, their appointed proxies, or corporate representatives are entitled to make comments, ask questions, or vote. All other attendees are very welcome as observers. You will be given the opportunity to ask questions in relation to the 2013 financial statements and the resolutions to be considered by the meeting. As such, shareholders with questions relating to specific resolutions are requested to ask them at the time the resolution is being considered. At the appropriate time, I will ask shareholders wishing to make a comment or ask a question to make their way to a microphone. Please show your yellow or red admission card to our microphone attendant and state your name, and if you are a proxy or a corporate representative, the name of the shareholder you represent before asking your question. If you have more than one question on an item of business, please ask all of your questions on that item and then resume your seat. I will then address each of your questions in turn. This will help enable as many shareholders as possible to have their questions heard. When voting on the resolutions, please use your yellow card. If there are any shareholders who are eligible to vote at this meeting who have not received a yellow card, please see a representative from Link Market Services at the registration desk in the foyer now. Each joint shareholding is only entitled to vote its shares once. So if two or more joint holders are attending today's meeting, only the vote of the joint shareholder whose name is recorded first in the register will be counted. If you are a non-voting joint shareholder or a shareholder who has already voted by direct voting prior to the meeting, you'll have received a red non-voting card. If you hold a red card, you're entitled to speak at the meeting but not vote. Visitors holding a grey card are not eligible to vote or speak at this meeting. I would like to advise that, except in relation to the resolutions in items 2, 6 and 7, all officers of Echo Entertainment Group Limited who have been appointed as proxy with discretion as to how they will vote as proxy holder, including myself as chairman, intend to vote all such shares in favour of all resolutions. Also, I remind shareholders that there may be restrictions on certain shareholders' eligibility to vote on specific resolutions. These restrictions were set out in the notice of meeting. In the interest of transparency of votes, as chairman, I am calling that voting on all resolutions be conducted by a poll today. This will ensure fairness to all shareholders by taking into account all proxy votes and direct votes that have been cast in addition to the votes of shareholders who are in attendance at this meeting. I will now open the poll, and if you need to leave early, you can still vote by completing your voting card and placing it in one of the ballot boxes near the exits. If you have any questions about how to complete the voting card, please see a representative of the share registry, Link Market Services. After the completion of discussion on the relevant item in the notice of meeting, the total number of valid proxies for that item and the manner in which they have been directed will be displayed on the screen. These figures will be as at the closing time for receipt of proxies, which was 9:30 a.m. on the 6th of November 2013. The total number of proxies and direct votes received and the voting results for each resolution will be released to the Australian Securities Exchange after the meeting. I now turn to the items of business in the order set out in the notice of meeting. Item 1, financial statements and reports. First item on the agenda is to receive and consider the financial statements and the reports of the directors and of the auditor in respect of the year ended the 30th of June 2013. These documents are contained in the annual report, which was either posted or emailed to shareholders who requested a copy. The financial statements have been approved by the directors and were audited by Ernst & Young. As required by the Corporations Act, the directors lay before the meeting the financial report, the directors' report and the independent audit report for the financial year 30th of June 2013. John Robinson, the Ernst & Young partner responsible for the audit and who signed the independent auditor's report on the 22nd of August 2013, is present today and available to answer any questions relevant to the conduct of the audit, the preparation and content of the independent auditor's report, the accounting policies adopted by the company in relation to the preparation of the financial statements, and the auditor's independence in relation to the conduct of the audit. Shareholders had the opportunity to submit written questions to the auditor prior to the meeting. No written questions for the auditor were received. I now invite questions from shareholders regarding the financial statements and reports and the performance of the company. This is your opportunity to raise any questions that you may have about the company's operations in the last financial year. At this time, I'll also take questions or comments about the management of the company. I encourage anyone who has a question to comment or question or comment on the performance of the company to raise it now, as there won't be another question time at the end of the meeting. To ensure that the requirement for a reasonable opportunity for shareholders as a whole to ask questions about or comment on the management of the company is met, I now ask the shareholders and proxies who may have more than one question or comment to initially ask one question only and then allow others to ask questions before you ask further questions. I'll throw it open to question time.
Mr. Chairman, I have Carol Limmer from the ASA.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Yes, Carol Limmer, and I represent Australian Shareholders Association and proxies represented nearly 500 in total votes, 1.6 million. And I'd just like to comment first on the unsolicited proposal and how distracting it must have been for the business, but in that time you've managed to bring in your investment in Star on time, on budget, and also to have set up a good platform going forward. In relation to the business going forward, with Queensland, I note you've got perpetual licences, but I presume they're open to competition, and whether there could be a brief comment on that, and also whether ECHO have considered going beyond the Sydney and Queensland locations as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Firstly, thank you for the comment on the Star being completed on time and on budget. In terms of our licences in Queensland, yes, they are in perpetuity. On the Gold Coast, we actually own the land as well. In Brisbane, whilst the licence is in perpetuity, the lease on the existing Treasury buildings goes to 2070. In terms of exclusivity, we don't have exclusivity in Queensland. So there is the opportunity, as foreshadowed by the Newman government, to issue potentially a number of additional licences. In terms of would we be looking at other locations? Not at this point in time.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Mr. Ray Farmer, card 1368. Did you get, sorry, Mr. Ray Farmer.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Farmer, as the lady just introduced me. I'd like to ask a few questions. Why do you reward people for failure? I noticed the total executive remuneration was $6,467,000. Larry Mullins received $3,228,000 for total failure. And in the previous year, Sid Viduka got $662,000 for bringing this company into disrepute with the New South Wales Gaming Authority. I noticed on page 20 it said that the refurbishment programs had been completed in Brisbane, and on page 5 it won the Luxury Hotel Award of 2012. Do management walk around with blinkers on? After the Queensland Premier, the direct quote from Herbert, run down and eroded. So I went in there and had a look. I used to have a player's card, and I was somebody else's guest, and I went up to the premium gaming floor with threadbare carpet held together with gaffer tape. That was 2 weeks ago. I went back there last week. Part of it has been repaired. There is still threadbare carpet held together with gaffer tape. I sat down. I was given a cup of coffee. I asked for a teaspoon. The server said to me, I'm sorry, we don't have any teaspoons. And that's in your premium gaming room? Do management walk around with blinkers on? We entered the building by, as you know, is a heritage listed building, by the George Street entrance, which is a slightly recessed sandstone entrance, and that rubbish had accumulated in the door. Somebody had discarded some takeaway food containers and some cups. And as I walked past, I mentioned to the receptionist, and her reply was, that's not our responsibility, that's the council's responsibility. And it's a five-star hotel that won the Luxury Hotel Award in 2012. You've also approached the government to have one floor manager to inspect 16 tables. 16 tables with one floor manager. That leaves yourself open, wide open for cheating, collusion, which I've actually seen. One for 16 tables. Could anybody in this room know anything about gaming to inspect 16 tables? You are losing money. Why didn't... Mr. Mullins get his remuneration cut in half from 4 cents down to 2 cents?
In terms of the first question regarding the payment to Mr. Mullin, which has been fully disclosed in the annual report, it was in accordance with our obligations under his contract and was in accordance with the corporation's law restrictions. That matter, I think, has been fully addressed. In terms of the comments on particularly our Queensland assets, I think more particularly Treasury in Brisbane, we have today, both John Redman and myself, have talked very openly about the plans for future investment on the Gold Coast and in Brisbane. And yes, we have acknowledged there has been underinvestment, which we intend to rectify. John, I don't know whether... John is a managing director, and he's the managing directors of those properties actively walk the premises. John, I leave it to you to make any observations.
Yes, regarding the lack of investment, we obviously share that, and we're moving quickly to rectify that. What you saw is what the existing buildings could look like when they're repurposed. We are also looking at upgrades to our private gaming areas in particular, realizing that we have another several years to operate these buildings before we would be moving out. So, unfortunately, a lot of these capital expenditure programs have lead times before you can start them, but we are well underway. The same type of direction and quality that you saw with the repurposing of the hotel, we are looking at upgrading our existing private gaming areas at the Treasury Casino. Probably some of that work should start hopefully before the end of this year, but if not, it'll carry into next year.
Mr. Redmond, on page 20 of the annual report, it says refurbishment programs have been completed. So why is there threadbare carpet held together with gaffer tape? And and why did you have teaspoons?
I don't have what you're reading. Threadbare,
and this was last Sunday.
That's it's totally unacceptable.
It's there. Do you walk around with blinkers on? Does Mr. Hogg walk around with blinkers on? Also, while we're on that, do we pay a training commission to the world's biggest gaming company? Do we?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your
question.
Do
we still pay a training commission to Caesars Gaming?
A trading commission? I'm not aware of
a trading commission. This was for the use of the word Conrad. We exited that. It
no,
cost us $35 million.
No, the answer is no.
Well, why are we still using Conrad chips on the Gold Coast? Mr. Hogg told me this time last year that we had an extension on it. How long is the extension? Because if Caesars Gaming catch you using their brand name, you can be sued.
We have our MDs for each of the properties you're referencing are here in the audience, and you're more than welcome to take up any of your operational questions with them. They would be happy to address each of those.
I was asked by the chairman about operating questions, and because I asked the same question last year. Do we pay a training commission to Caesars Gaming?
We answered that already, and no,
well,
no
well,
means no.
Why are we still using their chips?
I can't answer that. I don't have the facts in front
of
me.
You are the CEO.
But I don't know everything. So that's why I've informed you that our managing people are here and they could answer that question for you.
The chairman said that you had a walk through our Brisbane properties. Didn't you see the threadbare carpet?
I've answered that question.
Thank
I don't
you.
Know how I can answer it again.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have shareholder Andrew Gray, holder card number 1045.
Thank you.
I can't speak about Brisbane because I've only ever been there once in the casino. I wasn't very impressed. But I'm regularly at the Jupiter's Casino and I think it's well run. It's well set out. The improvements you've done over the last couple of years have been very good. For the average punter, I think he's well looked after. The food is exceptionally good and is cheap and reasonable, which to a Scot means a lot. So I'm just trying to balance that as compared to Brisbane. But what I wanted to speak about, initially, I think Mr. Redman is to be commended because what a job he has taken on. I hope he had the silver hair before he started, but at least he's got a lot more than what I have. But as I'm 80, I suppose I can make allowances. But I would like to speak about the annual report. I was a bit disappointed in that. Being retired, I run about 40 different shares in my portfolio between myself and the super fund, and it takes time. But I've noticed a trend with all these reports that there are more pages devoted to the annual remuneration report than what there are to the more essential things. There used to be a saying, one picture is worth a thousand words. I'd like to change that to one pie chart or one graph is worth a thousand words. We've got plenty of words in here. And the only pie chart or graph I've seen was in Mr. Redmond's address, which clearly showed that we're way behind Crown, but at least it's easy to see. So for next year, could we have less of the spin and the fancy words and more easy to follow facts and figures? Thank you for your help.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, I have Herbert Fuchs.
After listening to your speech, how well we have done and all the improvements and what have you, why didn't you pay us a better dividend?
So what's the question?
And I also got another question on your plans of further expansion and capital. How are you going to finance this? Not so long ago we the shareholders put in some more money. That was the 1-for-5 issue, right? And we already lost about 20% on that. Now how are you going any future capital investments? How are you going to finance this? Through equity or through debt? What are your plans? I don't think you got a good credit rating that you'd be able to raise the money anywhere.
In terms of the dividend payout policy, is 50% of no less than 50% statutory NPAT for the financial year FY13. It was 6 cents. That came to 59% of statutory NPAT. So it's in excess of the benchmark. In terms of the balance sheet and funding for projects, they're not in a position today to be elaborating on the manner in which we may well fund and develop the opportunities that are before us. But in the future, we'll speak more openly about that.
Also, going back to your speech, how well we have done, why isn't this reflected in the share price? Especially if you have a look at the multiple. There's a multiple of about 20 or 30, right? You take a multiple by Grand Casino, that's about 10 or 12. You use the same multiple on Echo shares, yes? Those Echo shares wouldn't be worth, 6 by 10, wouldn't be worth more than 60 cents. Now, we paid $3.30 for the 1-for-5 issue, right? Now, it's about $2.70. And you think the shareholder will put in more money into your company if you waste it like this and the market doesn't appreciate it?
I can assure you the board, and as a shareholder, we're not happy with where the share price is. And doing all in our power to restore it to where we believe true value would be reflected. A number of factors came into play during the course of FY13, which detrimentally impacted on the share price. But much of what John Redman and his management team have talked about today is about driving shareholder value.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I have a shareholder, Alec Wabshaw, holding card number 1374.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to congratulate the board on their projected capital expenditure. I think that the company will be in a very good position once those building projects are completed. But the capital expenditure involved is going to be pretty heavy, and I'm just wondering what the board's got in mind about the rate of increase in the amount of dividend and over the next 10 years. I'm just wondering, would they have the cash to be able to increase the dividend, even though the profit might go up considerably?
Thank you for that very good question. The board, together with management, is continuing to work through the potential options for funding CapEx over quite a long period of time. As John Redman pointed out, as an example, if we were are successful in Brisbane, it's likely that construction would not start until at least calendar 2017. And so the time frame in which demands on the company for the outlay of CapEx over quite a long period, but we are exploring and examining all options that enable us to take the opportunities that we've talked about today without impacting in a harmful way on the balance sheet and indeed on the return to our shareholders. I'm not in a position to make comments today about future dividend policy, but underlying performance and operational excellence is clearly the best way to return value to shareholders.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have Terence Freestone, card number 1018.
Thank you.
Good morning. My question was in relation to the Townsville Casino. We had a conference there recently and the government buses have ceased running to the casino or to the casino stop, which might appear a minor thing, but I can tell you from a conference point of view it will not occur again with that group because they won't go back. I just found it surprising that even though you gave rather negative connotations today towards Townsville, it's still milking money. The staff are still being paid. It still should be a vibrant business. And I was just wondering if it's in anybody's agenda to negotiate with somebody and get the buses or an alternative to come to that point. The other thing I wanted to say was a comment in to follow up from the other gentleman's comment on why Crown has a better multiple effect on the share price than Echo is possibly because I, like many other people, have a much better indication of what Crown's going to do in the future to what Echo is going to do. Thank you.
On the first question on Townsville, John Redmond in his address spoke to the possibility of a transaction in respect to Townsville, but only on the basis that full value for that asset was extracted. In terms of the question about buses and transport, if we can take that offline, and Jeff Hogg, who is Managing Director of Treasury in Brisbane and also Townsville, can address that question after the meeting. In terms of the comparison for Crown, there's Crown as an entity has been operating for a considerable period with a very mature and very well established and well run asset in Melbourne and a refurbished asset in Perth, plus the contribution to Crown Resorts Limited from its joint venture under the banner of Melco. The comparisons are not particularly like with like. It certainly is our aspiration to achieve the sort of returns that Crown are achieving. But in the context of Echo's existence over a two-year period, that objective will be achieved, but it will be in a reasonable period of time. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have Edward Walgan, share card number 1414.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. I want to start where you should have started, safety. Now, while you're introducing a new system in safety, and that's good, I note your safety record went backward this year. Now, if you've got the same safety record with customers, we've got a major problem. This is an area where you should be number one. And I'm not really caring about it. I remember Katie Lay on the board of DJs, and I mentioned the same thing there. They've actually improved their safety record enormously. You've got a lot of problems with safety at various times. We've had our security guards do some stupid things. So I think safety is one area where you need to really step it up, not only for our own workers, but also for our customers, and it should be reported a hell of a lot better than it is in the current report. I'll move on. Well, you've already mentioned our situation with Barangaroo. We've got 6 years to try and sort that out, and I hope you get it right. I note in Queensland they want to increase the number of casinos from 4 to 7. I don't know what's going on, but I think the Queenslanders are dumb. How you can consider you're going to get 7 casinos in Queensland, stupid, and then offering a second casino in Brisbane when you've already got an operator there to a second outlet, I think is stupid. That's just a comment from me, Mr. Chairman. You don't have to make a comment on that. But I did note there is something in today's financial review from somebody who's working in Queensland that I haven't fully read the article, but there was some very negative comments from somebody in Queensland who was associated with the government. So I'm not totally sure the Queensland government are on your side. I'm not sure what's happening. It seems as though Mr. Packer seems to be getting his way and we seem to be thrown out with the wolves, but that's nothing. You've just got to fight hard to get to your right position. I note that we have a number of, and no offence to our gentlemen who are operating our casinos, they are American, but it does raise the question with our problems that we've occurred in the past, and somebody's already related to it, succession planning. Mr. Redmond, obviously you're a very experienced man, and I hope somewhere along the line you can build yourself a successor for this organisation. We have 2 American people running our casinos at the moment and our properties. Succession planning really, really is important, and it's not only succession planning for management, it's succession planning on the board. And as you know yourself, Mr. Chairman, we've had a lot of problems in that regard, partly from emphasis from other areas, but let's really put a heavy emphasis on training some senior management and let's see them start to come through, please.
Thank you.
I also note I couldn't find a 5-year summary. Now, I accept we've only been here for 2 years, but the previous reports we've had have had, I can't think of the word at the moment, but we have had pro forma figures. Why we haven't got a 5-year summary in this report with the pro forma figures from before, I hope that the Chief Financial Officer will take that on. Obviously, pro forma figures were prepared in the past. We could have had a 5-year summary with the pro forma figures. Next year, we'll have 3 years of our own full figures with the pro formas for 2 years. Can we have a 5-year summary? And in the long term, when we get to 6 years of our own and 7 years of our own, can we have the 5 and the 6 years of our own so we get to a situation where we get 10 years? Have a look around. There's some very good reports around that produce good 10-year and 5-year summaries. I leave it to the Chief Financial Officer to make thoughts for the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And all your points are good ones on safety. The board and its subcommittees incredibly conscious through the occupations, health and safety environment to move our standards to a much higher level. In terms of Queensland and tactics, we believe we're well positioned. In terms of succession planning, it's a very distinct responsibility that the board discusses and actions regularly. And your point about 5-year summary will be taken on board by the Chief Financial Officer, Matt Beckier. Thank you. Are there any more questions? If not, yes, more questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a shareholder, Ian Stewart, holding card number 1375.
I don't get the annual report sent to me on nothing, but I picked one up today, and I looked at page 61, and I see that over half of our directors don't have any shares in the company. Is there any good reason for this?
I think you'll find that this report is at the 30th of June 2013, and since that time I think all directors, including the executive directors, are shareholders. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a shareholder, Mr. Noel Levy, card 1273.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning, Noel.
One or two comments. First, about the Gold Coast. I'm not very keen that you should spend a lot of money because the site, where it's situated, it's not a very good site. You've made improvements before, but it's just the same old spot. Is it possible, like, that the license could be transferred to another site, for instance, on the beachfront or something like that, where I think it's more what the Gold Coast people that go there would expect? It's just a comment. So I'm not very keen on you spending a lot of money on the site as it is. On the other hand, Brisbane, I think that's a much better proposition. My question, though, relates to bad or doubtful debts. You've had a problem a few years ago. I think there was legal action taken against some people that owed money or something. So in the report, I couldn't find the information relating to bad debts. So I'd like to ask, what are the bad debts? What sort of bad debts have you got that are outstanding, let's say, for 12 months or something like that? The magnitude of those debts? It's not very good on the company if they have to have taken legal action. It's a negative impact on the media. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Regarding your observations about the Gold Coast site, as I said earlier, we own that site and we've already admitted that there's been an underinvestment, but we believe the site, with the appropriate level of investment, will be restored to its former glory. Matt Beckier, the CFO, will just address the bad debt question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can refer you to note 16 in the financial accounts, where we set out the trade receivables and the provisions we've taken. In short, we've made a lot of progress in the area of bad and doubtful debts. We've reduced our receivables substantially in the VIP business. Last year, we were looking at $129 million worth of outstanding revenue at balance date. That number has reduced to $74.3 million. At the same time, we've introduced a more aggressive provisioning system so that any debt over 4 years old is fully provided for. So we feel that we are in very good shape on the bad debts where we stand today.
The 70 million, how long is it outstanding for? How much of it, you know, is 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year?
Yeah, it ranges. It ranges from anything over 30 days up to 4 years. As I said, anything above 4 years is 100% provided for.
But what's the magnitude for each year? Do you have that information?
We only provide the breakup, you know, 30 days and less and so on. From, you know, if I can give you an order of magnitude, we have about $25 million worth of debt, which is more than 12 months old. The reason why that debt may not be fully provided is because debtors may be on a payment plan or we hold security over specific assets that we expect to realize.
It does seem a large amount of doubtful debts to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have Alec Wabshaw holding card number 1374.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to come back, but I couldn't help it when I heard that last speaker say what he said. I've been going up to the Gold Coast for just about every year for the last 58 years, And I would say that where that casino is probably the best position of any casino in the country by a mile. And particularly now with the new rail line, light rail, going down from Southport to Broadbeach, it's only going to enhance the position.
Yes.
But I can assure you there's no better position. Thank you.
Thank you. As we've now addressed a large number of questions, I think this next one will be the last question.
Mr. Chairman, I have Mr. Ray Farmer, card 1368, returning.
Good morning. Mr. Redmond made quite an event of the relaunch of the rewards cards. Many years ago, I was issued with an Endeavour Room card and I was issued with a Sovereign Room card, and I used to come down with the $5,000 buy-in. And I came down this time and I was told the card never expired, it never had an expiry date on it. Yet I can go to the Pearl Room in Crown Perth, it's a $5,000 buy-in. I can go to the Mahogany Room in Melbourne, $5,000 buy-in, a $10,000 buy-in in Macau in the City of Dreams. And yet, Wednesday night I came down here, I was told it was a $25,000 buy-in to get access to the premium gaming room. $25,000 minimum. I only bought $10,000 in cash with me. So Mr. Packett is very successful in the casino business. Why has it gone from $5,000 up to $25,000 and a card that never expires, it was taken off me and it's gone. $25,000 buy.
Thank you. John Redmond?
The only comment I can say is either someone told you incorrectly or whatever they told you was misunderstood, but the requirements for people accessing our private gaming rooms are clearly delineated in terms of what point values people have to have, and I can only assume that you didn't have a particular point value at the time you were trying to access a room. So, but I don't know the particulars, sir, about your account or your situation, so it's hard for me to comment with any degree of intelligence, but the gentleman who is responsible for this property, Frederick, he will be more than happy to answer any of your questions regarding your specific case. We'd love to have that resolved.
Thanks, John. I'll now move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the remuneration report, item 2. The company's remuneration report is in the annual report in respect to the financial year ended 30th of June 2013. This remuneration report forms a part of the director's report and can be found on pages 65 to 83 in the annual report. The report contains considerable detail about the company's remuneration strategy, policy and remuneration for directors and executives. I note that the shareholder vote on this resolution is advisory only and does not bind the directors or the company. It is, however, an important process, and we take seriously the level of support that is received and the matters that are raised. This was a factor in our decision to have voting by way of conducting a poll today. Under the Corporations Act, if 25% or more of votes that are cast are voted against the adoption of the remuneration report at two consecutive annual general meetings, shareholders will be required to vote at the second of those annual general meetings on a spill resolution, that is, that another meeting be held at which all of the company's directors, excluding the Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, should be put up for re-election. This Corporations Act requirement applied at last year's meeting, and I'm pleased to note that a favourable vote was received for the 2012 remuneration report. Are there any questions regarding the company's 2013 remuneration report?
Mr. Chairman, I have Carol Limmer from the Australian Shareholders Association.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I note that there have been quite a few positive changes in ECHO's 2013 remuneration report that have been reported. For instance, in 2012-13, there was no increase in fixed remuneration for the key management people, except in one case where there was a significant increase in role responsibilities. And also note that no short-term incentives were paid for FY13, as the normalised NPAT target wasn't met. And also that the performance period for the long-term incentive plan has been increased from 3 to 4 years. See that for FY14, no increase will apply to fixed remuneration for the CEO or the CFO, and that there's a one-third, one-year deferral into shares to be applied to STI payments when they're made, with clawback provisions included as well. Also, see that there's been a second hurdle, an EPS hurdle introduced for the long-term incentive plan, as well as a change for the better from fair value to moderated face value for the purposes of determining the allocation of long-term incentive scheme performance rights. Also that there's no retesting on the long-term incentive performance hurdles. You know, that's all good. I guess from the Australian Shareholders Association point of view, we would like to see the deferral on the STIs extended, both in amount and also in the amount of time that they're deferred for. And also, we would look to see a more rigorous vesting scale on the LTI plan, as at the moment 50% of the performance rights vest at the 50th percentile in relation to your relative total shareholder return hurdle. I note in that recent media coverage that there was some comment on the extent of the CEO's fixed remuneration, but at the same time I note that there's been no increase in that fixed remuneration. In conclusion, two things: the vesting scale on the LTI and extending amount and timing on deferral of the in relation to the STI are things that we would ask that the board consider as part of their further reviews. But considering the position overall and the number of positive changes made, including the recent changes to remuneration policy, the ASA does propose to support the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take those comments and observations on board. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have shareholder Noel Levy, card 1273, returning.
Mr. Chairman, again. First of all, the number of pages, 18 pages in the new remuneration report, they're pretty large in all the companies, but they seem to be getting bigger and bigger. So it would be appreciated if you could try and reduce them and save paper and save trees. The second thing with the short-term incentives, there's too many qualitative items in it. There's one that I've just wrote here, employee engagement scene. What's that? That's one of the qualitative tests in the short term. So, you know, can you try and have more or all quantitative tests that we can all actually assess? Qualitative depends on the individual. Quantitative is much easier to assess for a shareholder. So that's one. The other thing is regarding the remuneration committee. They get advice from outside remuneration agencies. I think it was 50 or 60. I can't remember now, but it was quite a large sum. Then when I look at the remuneration of the board members of the remuneration committee, the chairman is getting a 27% increase
And the members of the board are getting a 60% increase. If you haven't got that, there it's on page 83 of the actual annual report. So, Mr. Chairman, they're getting this assistance from outside, which we're paying for. Surely the workload can't be increasing, or else it's very inefficient paying these outsiders to come in to just increase the workload, so we have to pay more to the remuneration committee. So my question is, why has the chair of the remuneration committee increased their fee by 27% and the members of the committee 60%? It appears to me they're looking after each other very well. Thank you.
Thank you. On your first question about KPIs, quantitative versus qualitative, inevitably it's a mixture of both. I mean, clearly having measures that are meaningful are critical. And on the quantitative side, it's a given that the measures relate to the budget and the performance of management against the budget. In terms of qualitative, you can't leave the qualitative components out of a business such as the one we're in, where you have many stakeholders, particularly customers and customer service, safety records, a whole array of measures that you are judged by. But I can assure you that we measure qualitative KPIs as closely as we measure quantitative. In terms of NED's remuneration, and going back to the opening comments about Echo being a relatively young company and the circumstances we've experienced in the last 2 years, and with the help of an external advisor in the form of PwC, we reviewed directors' fees in the course of the last 12 months and moved away from some of the practices that we inherited from Tabcorp, such as the chairman previously would receive a chairman's fee and then fees for being a participant on various committees. It's now a standard set fee for the chairman. In terms of the chairman of the Remuneration Committee, Anne Brennan, Anne's fees as disclosed in the annual report reflect the fact that for the vast majority of the year she was also chairman of the Audit Committee. You would recall that in the course of the last 12 or 18 months, we were down to three non-executive directors, and was good enough to take on additional responsibilities as chairman of two very significant committees, audit and remuneration, and hence that's reflected in the total fees for 2013. But with the best advice, our view is that the non-executive director's fees in globo and individually are market-related. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have Edward Walgren, card 1114, returning.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately this will add a bit of paperwork to your remuneration report, but might answer the gentleman's question in respect of complexity. A good practice that's now starting to appear is that the chairman of the remuneration report provides a small report to summarise the report and then actually presents that report at the annual general meeting. I put that to you as a consideration for the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We'll take that on board. Are there any more questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have shareholder Andrew Gray, card holder number 1045, revisiting.
Just a comment on remuneration. The board of this company and a lot of other companies are always stressing that they're working in the best interests of the shareholders, but what the shareholders are interested in is their dividends, and some of the previous speakers have commented on that. Meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, we have a 19-page remuneration report. Just an idea from a left wing. Wouldn't it be better to align the remuneration of the company's directors with the actual dividends paid?
Thanks, Andrew, for that comment. Are there any more questions? As there are no more questions, I'll now move that the remuneration report, which forms part of the director's report in respect of the year ended 30th of June, be adopted. This is an ordinary resolution which requires a majority of votes cast by shareholders entitled to vote on the resolution or by their appointed proxy or authorised representative. Details of valid proxies and direct votes received in respect of this item of business are set out on the screen. I note that as chairman of the meeting, I'm permitted to vote undirected proxies on item 2 if a shareholder has appointed me as their proxy and, as provided in the shareholder voting form, has expressly authorised me to vote on this item, even though the resolution is connected directly or indirectly with the remuneration of members of the key management personnel of Echo Entertainment Group Limited. As indicated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. I note that no votes may be cast on this item by members of the key management personnel of the company or their closely related parties unless the vote is cast by them as directed as a proxy for a person who is entitled to vote on this item. As I mentioned earlier, in the interest of transparency of votes, voting on all resolutions today will be conducted by a poll. This will ensure fairness to all shareholders by taking into account all proxy votes and direct votes that have been cast in addition to the votes of shareholders who are in attendance at this meeting. In addition, given the potential impact that the votes on the advisory resolution regarding the remuneration report may have on next year's AGM, your board believes it's appropriate that the voting on this item be conducted by a poll rather than by a show of hands. I now call for a poll on this resolution, which will be held at the end of this meeting together with the poll on the other resolutions. I'll provide more instructions for the poll after we deal with the remaining resolutions set out in the notice of meeting. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick either for or against the box next to item 2 and hold on to your voting card until the end of the meeting. The share registry will collect your voting cards at the end of the meeting. Now moving on to items 3 to 6. The next three items on the agenda relate to the election of directors. As noted in the notice of meeting under the company's constitution, any director who is appointed by the board may hold office only until the end of the next annual meeting, general meeting, following their appointment, and is eligible for election at that meeting. Each of the directors under consideration at this meeting were appointed after the last annual general meeting, and each in turn at the respective items of business retires in accordance with the company's constitution and, being eligible, offers themselves for election at this meeting. The directors standing for election at this meeting are Ms. Katie Lay, AM, Mr. Richard Shepherd, Mr. Gerard Bradley. The resolutions relating to their elections are all ordinary resolutions which require a majority of votes cast by shareholders entitled to vote on the resolution or by their appointed proxy or authorised representative. Each of the directors, other than the director standing for election, recommends the election of each of the other directors who are standing for election. I now turn to the individual directors. Item 3, the election of Katie Lay, AM. Item 3 of the agenda is the election of Katie Lay as a director of the company. Katie is the chairman of the People, Culture and Social Responsibility Committee. She is also a member of the Risk and Compliance Committee and the Remuneration and Nomination Committee. I welcome Katie to say a few words by way of an address to this meeting. Katie.
Thank you, John, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I joined the ECHO board as an observer in October 2012, and I'm very pleased to have become a non-executive director in March this year following the receipt of my regulatory approvals. As mentioned in the notice of meetings, I have previously been a long-term member of a number of boards, including David Jones and Australia Post. And currently I'm the chairman of Carnival Australia, which is part of the world's largest cruise company. I've also had various CEO roles in both the public and private sectors, including Chief Executive Officer of the State Chamber of Commerce here in New South Wales, Chief Executive Officer of the Sydney City Council in the lead up to the 2000 Olympic Games, and Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of the Victorian Tourism Commission based in Melbourne. I'm currently the CEO of the Australasian business of Korn Ferry, and Korn Ferry is a global talent management and executive search company with over 80 offices around the world. Prior to that role, for 10 years I was the CEO of the Business Council of Australia, which is an organisation that represents the CEOs of Australia's top 100 companies. Through my executive career, I've gained extensive experience in retail and tourism, in addition to my experience in general management, marketing, media and human resources. In my time at ECHO, I've been able to apply these experiences in both business and government to the board deliberations on both operational and strategic matters. And as John mentioned, I have been very pleased to be appointed as chair of the newly established People, Culture and Social Responsibility Committee, and that committee will also look after all the occupational health and safety issues. I thank you in advance for your support to my election to the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Before moving to the re-election of Katie Lee, are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have shareholder Andrew Gray.
What a marvellous record she has in business. I have one simple question which requires a yes or no answer. You were initially an observer on the board and helping them, and since March you've been on the board. Did you ever consider, when you were appointed to the board, that you had a moral and ethical obligation to buy some shares in the company? It's not as if you couldn't afford them, and somebody referred to that earlier, and I think, having been a company director, that one of the first things I did, if I'm going to be a company director, put some money into the game.
Like all the directors on the board, I have purchased shares. It's just not shown in the annual report because we were only allowed as a window to purchase shares following the end of the financial year. So since then, I have purchased shares.
Thank you. It would have looked a lot better in the annual report. Could I ask how many shares you purchased?
I can't remember the exact number, but it's $10,000 that's gone into my super scheme.
Thanks, Katie. Any more questions? As there are no more questions, I now put the motion to approve item 3, that Katie Lee be elected as the director of the company. I confirm that the board fully supports the election of Katie as a director and as a shareholder. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are set out on the screen. As indicated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. As with item 2, in my capacity as chairman of the meeting, I've called a poll in relation to this resolution, which will be taken at the end of the meeting. Again, if you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick either the for or against box next to item 3 and hold on to your voting card until the end of the meeting. Now moving to item 4. Item 4 of the agenda is the election of Richard Shepherd as the director of the company. Richard also joined the board as an NED on the 1st of March 2013 following receipt of all regulatory approvals. Richard is the chairman of the Risk and Compliance Committee. He is also a member of the Audit Committee and the People, Culture and Social Responsibility Committee. I now welcome Richard to say a few words.
Thanks, John, and good morning, everybody. As John's mentioned, like Katie, I've been a member of the board since March of this year, after participating as an observer since November 2012, so I've been involved for about a year now. My own background and experience is in the banking and finance sector, which includes a long career of, as John mentioned earlier, over 30 years with the Macquarie Group Limited. Up until 2 years ago when I retired from executive responsibilities, I was managing director and chief executive of Macquarie Bank Limited, which is the banking arm of the Macquarie Group, and also chaired the boards of a number of Macquarie's listed entities, mainly in real estate and infrastructure. In terms of current roles, I remain involved with Macquarie in an honorary capacity as chairman of the Macquarie Group Foundation, which is the charitable arm of the Macquarie Group, and am also chairman of Green State Power, which is a New South Wales government-owned organisation involved in hydroelectricity and renewable energy. I'm also a non-executive director of another ASX entity, which is the Dexus Property Group, which as some of you might know is the largest owner of office buildings in Australia. My executive career in the banking and finance sector, combined with my involvement in previous and current directorships, has provided me with obvious experience in broad management and overall board oversight. I've found that there's a number of parallels between the banking sector and the gaming sector. Both are extensively regulated and both involve heavy emphasis on risk management. So I've found that I've been able to directly apply that knowledge and experience to echo board discussions generally, as well as matters considered by the Risk and Compliance Committee, which I've chaired since March this year. So subject to your support today, I look forward to continuing to play a role on the board of your company. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard. Before moving the election of Richard Shepherd, are there any questions? If not, I can now put the motion to approve item 4, that Richard Shepherd be elected as the director of the company. I confirm the board fully supports the election of Richard as a director. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are set out on the screen. As stated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. Again, I have called a poll in relation to this resolution. Please mark your voting card now if you wish by ticking the for or against box next to item 4. We will now proceed to the next item of business, which is item 5. Item 5 is the election of Gerard Bradley as the director of the company. Gerard joined the board as an NED on the 30th of May this year following receipt of all regulatory approvals. Gerard is the chairman of the Audit Committee. He's also a member of the Risk and Compliance Committee and the Remuneration and Nomination Committee. I welcome Gerard to say a few words. Gerard.
Thank you, John. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As the most recent appointee, I'm pleased to have been a member of the ECHO board from 30 May this year, after first participating as an observer since February. My executive background lies in government and finance. I have over 30 years' experience in the Queensland and South Australian Treasury departments, including 14 years as Queensland Under-Treasurer. I'm currently the chairman of Queensland Treasury Corporation, which is the central borrowing authority for the Queensland public sector. I have previously served as chairman of the Board of Trustees at QSuper, and my previous non-executive board memberships include a number of government, financial and commercial companies, including Queensland Investment Corporation, Funds SA, Suncorp and Southbank Corporation. My Queensland Treasury roles involved responsibility for the preparation and management of the state budget and the fiscal and economic development of Queensland, I've also had extensive commercial experience in infrastructure funding and privatisation and restructuring of government entities. This understanding and experience with business and government, together with my finance background and qualifications, enables me to provide valuable input into issues that are being considered by the ECHO Board and in performing the role of Chair of the Audit Committee. I look forward to continuing to serve on the now strong and established board of your company with your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerard. Before moving to the election of Gerard Bradley, are there any questions? There are no questions, so I now put the motion to approve item 5, that Mr. Gerard Bradley be elected as the director of the company. I confirm the board fully supports the election of Gerard as a director. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are again set out on the screen. As stated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. I've called a poll in relation to this resolution. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now, keeping hold of that card until the end of the meeting. We will now proceed to the last two items of business. Items 6 and 7 of the agenda relate to the proposal to grant performance rights to Mr. John Redmond, the company's Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, and to Mr. Matt Beckier, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Executive Director. Items 6 and 7 are both ordinary resolutions which require a majority of votes cast by the shareholders entitled to vote on the resolution or by their appointed proxy or authorised representative. The notice of meeting contains significant detail about the performance rights proposed to be granted to John and Matt under the company's long-term performance plan. I do not propose to read aloud all the details at this meeting. However, I will now summarise the key elements. Relevant information is also published in ECHO's annual report. The notice of meeting sets out a formula for calculating the number of performance rights proposed to be granted to John and Matt respectively, based on a monetary dollar value divided by the moderated face value of a performance right, which is calculated as the price of the company's shares at the allocation date, the 1st of October 2013, less the value of any dividends foregone by the award holder during that vesting period. The moderated face value was calculated by an independent external consultant. The performance rights may vest on the 1st of October 2017, subject to the satisfaction of applicable performance hurdles. If performance hurdles have not been met on that test date, then any unvested performance rights will lapse. The performance hurdles which apply in respect of the grant of these performance rights is relative to total shareholder return, TSR, and absolute earnings per share, EPS. 50% of the performance rights proposed to be granted to John and Matt will be subject to the TSR performance hurdle, and the other 50% of their performance rights will be subject to the EPS hurdle. Details about the TSR and EPS performance hurdles are set out in the notice of meeting. The performance hurdles are the same as for all other executives who will be granted performance rights under the company's long-term performance plan for the financial year ending the 30th of June 2014. Dealing specifically with item 6, which is the proposal to grant performance rights to John Redmond, the company's Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. John's total annual remuneration package consists of three components. Base remuneration of $2.25 million per annum, inclusive of superannuation. A short-term incentive of $1.5 million if individual and group targets are met. And thirdly, a long-term incentive equivalent to $1 million delivered in the form of performance rights only if specific performance hurdles are achieved. It is proposed that John be granted a long-term incentive award totalling $1.5 million, comprised of $500,000 worth of performance rights, representing a 50% pro rata grant for FY13, which reflects the fact that John was Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer for almost half of FY13, but did not participate in LTI allocations that year, and $1 million worth of performance rights for FY14. To provide John with a long-term incentive award equivalent to $1.5 million, it's proposed that shareholders approve the grant of 590,551 performance rights. As described in the notice of meeting, the number of performance rights was determined based on the formula of $1.5 million divided by the moderated face value of a performance right as at 1 October 2013, which was $2.54 per performance right. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman. Carol Limmer from the ASA returning.
Thank you. As I noted under the remuneration report commentary, there's been an LTI performance hurdle that's now at 4 years. A second hurdle, the EPS hurdle, has been introduced, and also the method for calculating the performance rights allocation has been changed to moderated face value. And then, as mentioned in relation to the remuneration report proposal, ASA would be looking to a more rigorous vesting scale, as the ECHO plan currently vests 50% at the 50th percentile of relative TSR performance. And so my request to the board is to consider that in their future remuneration reviews. And as I also mentioned under the remuneration report, considering the position overall and the recent positive changes that have been made to REM policies, and in relation to this one in particular, the LTI plan, ASA do propose to support the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? I'll now move that approval be given to the grant of 590,551 performance rights to the Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer John Redmond under the ECHO Entertainment Group Limited Long-Term Performance Plan and on the basis described in the explanatory memorandum to the notice of meeting. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item are now set out on the screen. As chairman of the meeting, I'm permitted to vote undirected proxies on this item if a shareholder has appointed me as their proxy and, as provided in the shareholder voting form, has expressly authorised me to vote on this item, even though the resolution is connected directly or indirectly with the remuneration of members of key management personnel of ECHO Entertainment Group Limited. As stated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. Again, in my capacity as chairman of the meeting, I have called a poll in relation to this resolution. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick either for or against the box next to item 6 and hold on to your voting card until the end of the meeting. We'll now proceed to the final item of business. Item 7 of the agenda is proposal to grant performance rights to Matt Bekier, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Executive Director. Matt's total annual remuneration consists of three components. Firstly, a base remuneration of $900,000 per annum, inclusive of superannuation. Secondly, a short-term incentive of $600,000 if individual and group targets are met. And lastly, a long-term incentive equivalent of $500,000 delivered in the form of performance rights only if specific performance hurdles are achieved. Matt's remuneration package has not changed from the previous year. To provide Matt with a long-term incentive award equivalent to $500,000, is proposed that shareholders approve the grant of 196,850 performance rights. As described in the notice of meeting, the number of performance rights was again determined based on the formula of $500,000 divided by the moderated face value of a performance right as at 1 October 2013, which was $2.54 per performance right. Are there any questions? In the absence of questions, I now move that approval be given to the grant of 196,850 performance rights to the Chief Financial Officer and Executive Director, Matt Bekier, under the ECHO Entertainment Group Limited Long-Term Performance Plan and on the basis described in the explanatory memorandum to the notice of meeting. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item are set out on the screen. As chairman of the meeting, I'm permitted to vote undirected proxies on this item if a shareholder has appointed me as their proxy and as provided in the shareholder voting form, has expressly authorised me to vote on this item, even though the resolution is connected directly or indirectly with the remuneration of members of the key management personnel of Echo Entertainment Group Limited. As stated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of this resolution. A poll will now be conducted for this resolution, as well as all the other items on the agenda. And I can confirm we'll now conduct a poll in relation to all agenda items, these being item 2, the advisory resolution on the remuneration report, item 3, the election of Katie Leahy AM as a director, item 4, the election of Richard Shepherd as a director, item 5, the election of Gerard Bradley as a director, item 6, the grant of performance rights to the managing director and chief executive officer, item 7, the grant of performance rights to the chief financial officer and executive director. Upon entering the meeting, all shareholders and appointed proxy holders who are eligible to vote at this meeting received a yellow admission card. This card is your ballot paper and contains all resolutions of this meeting. Proxy holders who hold open votes will need to record a vote in favour or against the resolution on the ballot paper. If the shareholder appointing the proxy has given directions on the proxy form as to how the proxy should vote, then the vote will already be recorded in accordance with that direction. You need only vote those open votes on the voting card. I ask that if you have not already done so, you record your vote by placing a mark in the box either for or against each resolution. Once you have completed the voting paper, you may place it into one of the ballot boxes held by the share registry staff or place it in one of the ballot boxes near the exit doors. The independent scrutineer appointed for the poll will conduct a review of the poll papers and procedures before a determination of the results is made. The results of the poll will be advised to the Australian Securities Exchange, the ASX, as soon as possible after the meeting. There being no further business, that concludes this year's annual general meeting, and I'd like to thank all of you once again for your attendance and support. I invite you all to stay and join with me and my fellow directors and members of the executive management team of Echo Entertainment for refreshments, which will be served outside the foyer in this magnificent event centre venue. Thank you very much. Meeting closed.